Welcome to episode 256 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us, listener. Today, we're going to be finding out what it's like to ski and surf in Nova Scotia, Canada. We discuss the new Valéan lift in Saint-Gervais, learn about Tromsø in Norway, and have all the latest news from the London Snow Show. We also have snow reports from Down Under, your feedback, and we have exciting news about a new sponsor. My name is Ian Martin. I'm joined by two guests in the studio today, both of whom are regulars on the show. Firstly, I'm delighted to welcome Bethany Garner. Listener, you might recognise her voice from her snow report she shared with us last winter. But the last time she was in the studio, I think, was way back in those horrible days of lockdown when the ski resorts were closed. And Bethany was telling us all about the boom in cross-country skiing back in episode 65. Hi, Bethany. How are you?
Hi, Ian. I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
You have made an epic journey to appear on the podcast today because I believe, where are you now?
Well, I'm back home in France, just outside Chamonix-Saint-Gervais. And yes, I've come from London where I was attending the plethora of ski networking events. And I managed to walk my way around the strikes in London and then same on the other side in France. So I'm feeling very, very smug that I've made it back.
You come straight off the train to join us on the show. So I appreciate that. And you said you're in France. Just be a little bit more specific. Where are you?
So I live in the bottom of the valley, not too far from Le Fayet, which is at the bottom of Saint-Gervais, but it's also only about 20 minutes to Chamonix itself.
Well, we're going to be talking about Saint-Gervais-Le Fayet a little bit later on. My second guest today is definitely a regular. I think it's only Mike Richards who's appeared on the show more often. I'm delighted to welcome back James Gambrell, CEO at the Ski Club of Great Britain and organiser of the London Snow Show. How are you, James?
Oh, very well. I clearly need to have a word with Mike. But yeah, great to be back on, Ian. Thanks for having me.
Now, behind you, I can tell the listener that I can see at least, 6 or 7 sets of skis. Are they your own personal quiver?
They are not. They're probably not skis anyone would necessarily want to go skiing on. But no, I'm actually in the basement of the White House in Farringdon, which is the ski club's partner pub. So all of the ski club's heritage items, including multiple pairs of skis ranging from, you know, wooden ones from 60 years ago to sort of the 1980 straight ones that I grew up skiing on are here. So, I thought it was a fitting place to be joining you in.
And there's a lot of memorabilia from the club in there. Is that for members only, or could anyone actually go along and have a look if they wanted to?
No, it is a public pub. So it's in Farringdon. It's called the White House. And yet you can come in anytime as a member of the public and just have a look at all the amazing memorabilia. So if you're a skier, definitely worth a visit.
Well, I'll put a link in the show notes to the location of that. Now, as you know, Christian, I always like to ask my guests at the start of the episode is, where did you ski or snowboard last? So I'm going to start with you, Bethany. Where was that?
So the last time I was on snow was actually the very end of last season. And I think I was on the Grand Monte where we had that last massive dump. And it wasn't quite the powder day I imagined because it was a little bit sticky. But it was great to be up on the Grand Monte in Chamonix for one last time.
Oh, well, my last time, now that I think about it, was when I was skiing the Snow Dome. So it was indoor snow, which I know, James, you do a bit of indoor skiing. But go on, tell me, when was the last time you were on snow?
So last time on snow, yes, would have been at the Snow Centre in Hemel. Just before that, I was lucky enough to be in Aspen in Colorado. But the last time skiing was at the Bowles Dry Slope, which is just down the road from my house. So there we go. Aspen to East Sussex in a couple of months. So that was my last time.
Oh, well, I actually grew up around that area, and we used to have, I don't even know, we had school trips to Bowles, but it's pretty short. It's like 50 metres or something, isn't it?
It's pretty short. I think it's 75 metres. I think the record slalom time is just over 7 seconds. So, yeah, you know, you have to, but you get a lot of runs in, right? So, you know, skiing is skiing wherever you are.
Okay, well, the snow season on the other side of the world is coming into its final weeks, but there are still plenty of skiing and snowboarding going on. We have a roundup on both countries from Miss Snow It All, Rachel Oaksash from snowsbest.com, plus Guy Beatson reports from New Zealand.
Hi, Ian. It's definitely the pointy end of the ski season down under, that's for sure. Spring is firmly here and the weather is throwing that classic Antipodes September tantrum. Is it going to rain? Is it going to snow? Is it going to rain? Is it going to snow? A story of Australian skiing. Still, 2025 has delivered a stellar ski season with plenty of powder days, and resorts are looking set to roll right through to the official close on October 5, as long as Ulla keeps smiling upon us. Across the ditch in New Zealand, they're soaking up proper spring treats. Queenstown's Coronet Peak, the Remarkables, Treble Cone and Cardrona all scored up to 30 centimetres in the last week, which they're all very happy about, after a less than average winter, while Canterbury's Clubfields finally got the goods too. Even Temple Basin, famous for closing before it opened, reopened with half a metre of fresh last weekend. Woohoo! Craggyburn, Broken River and the playground of the gods Mount Olympus are all buzzing with rare powder turns this week as well. Meanwhile, Mount Hutt is eyeing a monster 4 metre season total. It's currently sitting at 375 centimetres. And heli skiing in the Mackenzie region near Mount Cook is next level right now, so it's time to book that in. If you've got the cash, of course. Up north, Ruapehu's Whakapapa, that's the name of the ski field, and Tiroa, they both grabbed 20 to 40 centimetres in the past week. So in short, the snow is on, the vibe is high, and spring is serving up a grand finale.
Kia ora, and welcome to the New Zealand Ski Report on the Ski Podcast. There's fantastic news coming out of the Southern Hemisphere as a fresh dump of snow has blanketed the Kiwi ski fields, extending what may turn out to be a brilliant season. Let's start with the North Island, where Mount Ruapehu was looking stunning. Whakapapa has been blessed with over 40 centimetres of fresh snow in the last week, and with a base of over a metre, conditions are epic. Over at Tūroa, they're boasting a solid base of up to 152 centimetres, so there's plenty of great skiing to be had there as well. Moving down to the South Island, and it's a similar story of powder-filled joy. Mount Hutt is leading the charge with an incredible base of over 160 centimetres, the deepest in the country. There's fresh snow across the Southern Alps, with Cadrona and Treble Cone both in great shape. At Mount Dobson, they have a good base of around 60 centimetres and all lifts are running. Further south, the Remarkables and Coronet Peak are still going strong, with most of their runs open for business. So whether you're on the North Island or the South Island, it's a great time to be hitting the slopes in New Zealand. Get out there and enjoy it.
Thinking ahead to this winter in the Northern Hemisphere, I'm delighted to announce that the Ski Podcast has a new sponsor for this winter, Tirol in Austria. Now, I am really excited about this. Long-term listeners might know my connection with Tirol goes back decades, as my parents first met on a ski holiday in Obergurgl, and I learned to ski in St. Anton. So what this winter's partnership means is that we're going to have the opportunity to find out more about some of the great ski resorts and ski regions in Tirol. And in particular, I'm going to try and get behind the sense of community and connection that you can find there. I'm going to talk to the people who know it best, the people from that area. First on the list is going to be Innsbruck, capital of Tirol, and we'll be discussing that next week in episode 257. Now, in other news, Bethany mentioned she was in London yesterday, and it's kind of weird with the podcast. Often, you know, I might go months or years without seeing the people who are guests on the show, but I happened to see both Bethany and James yesterday because I was at Ski Launch in London. It's an industry season-opening event. I curate and moderate the forum there. We had some brilliant panels covering topics from the rise of the magic pass to innovations in sustainability, how to get more kids skiing, what to look out for at the Winter Olympics, and I also delivered a presentation about the future of skiing. I wondered, Bethany and James, how you found that intense 24 hours of networking in the UK.
It was great. You know, it's always the launch of the season, suddenly you see all the ski journalists and all the industry people. You start talking about what's coming ahead of us for the winter. And apart from slightly losing my voice, I had an absolutely great time. And now it's ski show, next step, all the coverage coming out, all the magazines coming out. And then before we know it, we'll be on our skis.
And what about yourself, James? We know, regular listeners to the show will know that you wear several hats, the Ski Club of Great Britain, where you're based now, but also organiser of the London Snow Show. Does that mean you have to do twice as much work?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? These networking events now, I have to sort of put both hats on. Luckily, they tend to they tend to go together quite well. But yeah, I mean, same as Bethany, it's always great. I think you have the summer holidays, the kids go back to school, you go straight into ski launch, and it really does feel like the kickoff of the season. It was really exciting to me to hear Shemi and Graham and Chris from GB Snow Sports talking about the Olympics. You know, it always feels like the Olympics creeps up on us, right? Every 4 years, but I can't believe it's another Olympic year. And it's really exciting, I think, going into this Olympics. You know, Dave Riding's kind of swan song season. He's in with a real shot in the slalom. I know there's a lot of competition, but I feel he's in with a real shot. And we've got so much talent in the British team. So I just think it's a really exciting winter ahead.
I mean, that was a really interesting panel. I'm afraid, listener, that event is, I guess it's a behind closed doors event. It wasn't recorded at all. But we had Shemi Alcott, Graham Bell and Chris Scott from GB Snowsport. And I was asking them who their tips for medals were. And, you know, realistically, you know, three medals is entirely realistic. But, you know, Beijing was challenging. We've had various guests on the podcast before to talk about that. Bethany, I think you're going to be out there. Am I allowed to ask you about that at all?
Yes. If all goes to plan, I'll be out there with the team. And, yeah, I can't wait as well. It's we've got a lot of medal hopefuls. I think there's going to be quite a lot of anticipation. And I think people are suddenly, just like you said, Ian, haven't realised it's Olympic year. Lots of people said, so when are the Olympics? I'm like, this winter. So I'm sure there's going to be kind of more and more build up, and hopefully we'll get to kind of listen and hear about our athletes a bit more, and then, yeah, get to see them on the stage. And I believe BBC will be covering it, so we'll all get to be able to consume it.
I think one of the great things about all these networking events, you have some really interesting conversations, get some, even for me, you know, I love all the idea sharing and everything. One of the bits of news I came across was in relation to the tour operator Peak Retreats. Basically, the staff have taken ownership of the company. So the owners have taken a step back and all of the staff now have equal shares in the company. And that is a really, really interesting idea. And I'm trying to see if I can work out a date to get them on the podcast to talk about it a little bit more, but I'll put a link in the show notes to the news about that. Another piece of news, I didn't come across this at Ski Launch, but Bethany and James, I wondered if you watched The White Lotus at all. The listeners, if you don't know, it's a drama about the super rich. So far, it's been filmed in luxury hotels in Hawaii, Sicily and Thailand. But there is a strong rumour that season 4 could be filmed in Megev. Do either of you watch The White Lotus, Bethany?
I have to admit, I haven't heard of it. No, I don't know. But it doesn't surprise me. If it's kind of for the rich and famous, then Megev is exactly the right fit. And I know that they filmed an episode of Emily in Paris there last year. So I guess it's all come from that.
James, are you watching The White Lotus?
I know it, but I haven't seen it. But if it's going to be based in Megev, then I'll definitely be tuning in for the next series.
Fingers crossed. Even if it's in a highly dramatised style, any focus on the ski industry is a good one. Now, Megev is very near to Saint-Gervais, very near to where Bethany lives. And I know you're here to help our listeners learn a little bit more about Tromso, and we're going to come to this. But I wanted to mention Saint-Gervais, as you and I actually met there a couple of weeks ago. Listeners will know I was out there to do a trail running race called the OCC. We only kind of met in passing. I was right at the top of the new Valéan lift, and that links Le Fayet with the other part of Saint-Gervais above. And I wondered if I could swap notes with you about the lift, because it is so impressive. And I think you live, you know, really near to that lift. I wondered if you could give me like a local's insight into how much impact it's had.
Yeah, so the Valéan opened last September, so then at the end of the summer, and it connects the Le Fayet at the base of the valley. And now it takes approximately 5 minutes to go from Le Fayet up into Saint-Gervais, and then that gondola actually connects then straight into the ski area gondola. It's actually a mode of public transport, so it's used a lot by locals, a lot by collegians and lycéens, so the teenagers essentially who are going maybe up to their sports activities in Saint-Gervais, but the lycée is down in Le Fayet itself. For me, you know, selfishly, it means that I can walk to the lift, jump on it and be skiing, but also, you know, we quite often use it to just go up to Saint-Gervais, so it means you don't have to take the road, which, although it's maybe you save yourself a few minutes, it means you don't have to get in the car, which obviously is great.
When I was reading about it, I believe it's estimated to cut the road traffic down by about 25%, which they reckon is going to be the equivalent of 15,000 cars per year. And so although it costs 45 million euros, there's a strong sustainability motivation behind creating that lift. Apart from anything, you mentioned that Le Fayet, you have the railway station down there. So it makes it even more feasible to travel by train and to stay down in Le Fayet as I did, you know, when I was there, perhaps rather than going up to, I don't know, Chamonix or going up to Les Bains itself.
I couldn't agree more, Ian. It's, I think people have really welcomed it. And for example, I've got friends who've got teenage children, and it means that they could just drop them there. You know, it might be a 5-minute journey rather than having to drive to Saint Gervais, and then they can leave them to go skiing. So yeah, it's working well.
One of the reasons I chose to stay in La Fayette is that they have an amazing spa there called Les Thermes. Part of my plan was to use it for my recovery on the day after my race. And I got to tell you, it was so good there. It's around €50 to get in, but I consider that to be really good value for money. You get a 3-hour session. And what really kind of surprised me about it is you can't take in a phone or even a book with you. You're kind of forced to be mindful and to actually relax. That was great. It's a little walk from where I was. It's just down a short road from the corner. I stayed in a great hotel called La Chaumière in La Fayette. We're probably maybe a 10 to 15 minute walk from there. Have you ever been to that, Bethany?
Yeah, I've been a few times to the spa with friends. It's great. It's kind of hidden away in the thermal parks, but it's a real hidden gem, I guess. And it's, you know, not as expensive as some of the flashier spas, but it's a lovely way to spend your time after skiing or even in the spring, summer, autumn, just, well, by yourself or with friends. I quite often go with friends. And yeah, it's a real treat. So I couldn't recommend it highly enough. And if people are coming on holiday to either La Fayette, Saint Gervais, or both, it's very easy to get to, and I'd definitely add it into your holiday plans.
For sure. I think one of the interesting things, and I was talking to one of the staff there, they were explaining to me that in France, you can actually get a prescription from your doctor to go to the spa, you know, maybe for skin conditions and things like that. I wish the NHS would treat me a visit to somewhere like that.
Yeah, so it's basically, there's two sides to the spa. So there's the side that we would use to kind of go relax for leisure purposes, but there is a medical side to the spa. You're absolutely right. And it's there to treat lots of different things, skin conditions. Like you say, you can actually get a prescription from the doctor.
And I also noticed, I didn't go on it, there's a lift from Les Thermes up to Les Bains, I would say, as well. And I almost spoke French then by accident. It's really interesting, but it's water powered. As far as I could understand it, it collects wastewater from the town, which then acts as a counterbalance, drives the lift downwards. And what I found most interesting about it, I don't know if you know this, probably you do, was designed by a Brit and inspired by a similar type of lift in Hastings. Did you know that?
I didn't know that until I read it on the info boards at the bottom of it. I thought the story was great about how it came about. I think from what I read, he went to the Mary and proposed the idea, and then it became reality. So, yes, it's, again, a really good asset.
Well, and also sustainable as well. Well, I'll have to do that one on my next trip. Well, I'd like to turn to you now, James, if it's okay. We were chatting at an event early this summer. I think it was a Three Valleys party. And you were telling me about an amazing trip that you went on where you were surfing and skiing on the same day. And I'm kind of mindful that maybe I've talked to people who've done this in New Zealand before. But it was when you told me that you were in Nova Scotia, in Canada, I was like super interested because first of all, I didn't quite have to look it up on the map, but I certainly didn't really realize that you could go skiing there. So I wonder if we could start off, maybe you could just explain to listeners where Nova Scotia is or how you got there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, as you know, I've been in this industry a long time and I thought I'd seen it all, but this was definitely something very new. So Nova Scotia, province of Canada, if you think where kind of New York is, you sort of go up that east coast until you get into Canada, you go up a little bit further and then you go right a bit, and that's Nova Scotia. So kind of sitting off the coast of Quebec, just above that. So Halifax is the capital, which you may have heard of. So that's the route in from the UK. You can fly directly from London to Halifax. It only takes about 6 hours, so it's actually not that far away.
What's the time difference? Is it like 4 hours or something?
Time difference, I think, is 4 or 5 hours, depending on the time of year.
And what time of year did you go there?
So we went out very beginning of March. I was out for about 4 days, first week of March. So very much still winter, although, and I'm sure this is obviously a theme everywhere, it was not as cold and snowy as you might imagine. So, you know, it's Canada. There was still a lot of snow. It was still pretty cold. But the first thing all the locals said, to me was, it's normally a lot colder and a lot snowier. So it was sort of typical kind of alpine temperatures for early March, I suppose. But I think normally it's quite a lot, you know, quite a lot colder than that.
And what kind of skiing is on offer then?
So the skiing is very, very different to anywhere else, certainly that I've been. You ski from sea level. I mean, literally, the gondola is called the Atlantic Gondola. And when you're standing in the gondola queue, behind you is the Atlantic Ocean. So your starting altitude is zero, right? Or maybe 2 meters, but pretty much that's it. At the moment, you go up to about 300 meters above sea level. So these are sort of oceanside cliffs. So it's a sort of high, a kind of highland, I suppose. It used to be very, very high mountains, taller than the Alps, kind of up into the sort of, you know, Himalayan peaks. But over time, erosion has kind of gone right down to the granite bedrock. So now what you've got left is the bedrock. So you're going up a gondola 300 meters or so up, and then it opens up in very typical North American fashion into a whole kind of multitude of runs on the way down. So a mix of mostly sort of blues, but a few reds and a few steeper options. But this is the start, right? This is a new resort being born. The gondola replaced a kind of old local sort of two-man chair that was just there for the locals. It's the only gondola in Atlantic Canada. But the plan is to add a lot more terrain, a lot more lifts, and build a ski resort from kind of scratch, which is pretty exciting.
Just so I understand that then, are you saying that the sort of vertical drop is 300 meters? Is that the max? Or is it?
Yeah, 300, 350 meters. So it's not very far, but it's more about the terrain. The terrain is actually really varied. So although it's not a big vertical drop, you can kind of get a lot of variety of runs in. And the plans that they have to open it up, you're going to have everything from kind of cruising blues and kind of steeper blacks. There is an awful lot of ski touring possibilities in the area as well. And we managed to do a bit of that. And what's really exciting about the ski touring is, I mean, literally, you will be the only people ski touring there. It is proper ski touring, as in you're just going off, finding somewhere to go skiing and finding your own route down. It's a winter destination, right? You're only going to ski the pisted runs for a day or two if you go there. But there's so much more to do, including the ski touring.
So it's quite unusual to have a new ski resort, to actually have an area that's being developed, certainly in Europe. You'd never be able to get the environmental permission in most cases to break into new terrain. I know in Cardrona in New Zealand, you know, they've done this recently in Soho Basin. Now, do they have any issues with expanding into, I'm guessing, say, virgin territory?
You know what? I thought exactly the same thing. But no, talking to Martin, who is the CEO and the kind of visionary behind this, I mean, essentially, this was Crown land, as he said. You know, it was owned by the British royal family. They bought it off the Crown. And now they can kind of do what they want. I mean, there are obviously regulations. This is Canada. So, you know, there are regulations, but pretty much they can do what they want as long as they're sensitive. So he told a great story about going to talk to the local authorities about saying, you know, I want to cut down this tree to make a ski run. And they sort of looked at him and went, they're your trees. You can do what you want. It's amazing, right? I mean, there's a lot of space in Canada. You know, they don't have quite the same pressure on land as we do over here or in Europe. So there is a lot of space. I think what's key is, you know, they're developing it in a very sustainable way, and they've got the backing of the locals. You know, the locals are seeing this ski resort come to life, and it's providing obviously opportunities for employment, but also everybody who lives in Nova Scotia is a skier. So for them, they've suddenly got this ski resort on their door, and they're working really well with the locals to make sure they have access. So yeah, they can sort of do what they want.
Okay, and you were there in March, and you said, oh, the locals said, oh, it's not that cold. But I'm figuring, you know, you said the Atlantic is, you know, at your back as you're going up the lift, but you were getting into the Atlantic. I reckon the Atlantic was probably pretty cold. How on earth did you go surfing? How does that work?
The water was pretty cold, yeah. So the air temperature was probably just above freezing. The water temperature was also just above freezing. So you're talking water that is a couple of degrees, right? So you're strolling along a beach and there are icebergs floating and there are, you know, piles of snow on the beach that are big enough to sit on. So a very weird experience. I mean, in short, we have really, really good wetsuits. And they were wetsuits, not dry suits, but they were, I think, 8 millimeters thick. I mean, the hardest thing I did all week was putting this wetsuit on. I mean, they are incredibly difficult to get on. But once they're there, so you know, you're fully clothed, you have a hood over the top, really tight fitting. And actually, you know what? Once you've got that on and you get into the water, it was fine. We were in for nearly an hour surfing and it was fine. But I did at the very end, because I had to kind of go, am I missing something? And under very strict instructions from our guide, I just took the hood down just so I could let a little bit of cold water go down. Yeah, that was a mistake. It was properly cold. You come out, you go straight in the hot tub, you take off the wetsuit in a hot tub, which again is a, you know, a feat in itself, and then you kind of gradually warm up. You can definitely do it. The wetsuits are amazing, but it's just be prepared for half an hour to get dressed each end.
You know, we've talked about cold water swimming on the podcast before. I think it was Katia Gaskell got into a lake in Samoan for the World Cold Water Swimming Championships or something. And yeah, I get in the sea here in the winter, but 8, maybe 7 is about the coldest it gets. And that feels pretty cold, although I guess we're not wearing a wetsuit. What kind of skin do you have exposed in? You must have some of your face exposed.
Just your face, yeah. So the hood is really tight-fitting, so it kind of just goes around your face. So your face is exposed, and obviously if you're surfing, you know, I mean, I'm not a surfer, right? So my when I'm saying surfing, I was not on the surfboard. I was basically face in the water for the full 45 minutes. But because the rest of your body is warm, it's fine. I mean, I wasn't uncomfortable. I wasn't cold at any point until I was silly enough to take the hood down. But we had some of the group also went paddleboarding. And again, literally you're paddleboarding and bumping into icebergs as you paddleboard and things. So it's a completely surreal experience, but absolutely amazing at the same time.
Well, I think I'm right in saying, obviously, you know, Nova Scotia want to get more people to come and visit. And I believe they're exhibiting at the London Snow Show. So that's quite a neat segue to that. Moving on to your role as organiser of the show. I think it's about 5 weeks, maybe 4 weeks to go now. You know, I mentioned on the last week's episode, listeners will have heard, I did a few reveals. But, you know, maybe you can just tell us now who the après-ski bands are who are playing on each day.
So we've got the Double Bluffs playing on Saturday and we've got the Wingmen playing on Sunday. I haven't seen the Double Bluffs play before. I've seen their videos. I have seen the Wingmen. They've played at the Listex event that we've spoken about before. They are absolutely brilliant. So both of these bands are regulars across the Alps. If you've been to the après hotspots, particularly in places like Mirabel and Bardisere, you probably will have seen them. So they know the après ski crowd. Yeah, they're going to be fantastic. I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I searched them up, actually, and I shared that on, there's a page on the skipodcast.com about the show itself. And then you mentioned Dave, you know, he's an outside chance for a medal. It's definitely going to be his last season. Dave Riding, we talk about, Britain's premier slalom alpine skier. He's going to be there, but amazingly, you managed to coordinate it. So you've got Laurie Taylor and Billy Major, his co-team members from the slalom team. All three of them are going to be there on the Saturday.
Yeah, that's right. So the Saturday, the show closes with Dave and Billy and Laurie, as you say, and Shemi's going to be interviewing them. So really excited about that. And then on the Sunday, we're showcasing the next generation, who you know very well, Ian, the Carrick Smith boys, who I know you are supporting with the Ski Podcast. So definitely two of them are coming, possibly three. It depends on the World Cup start in Salton, which is a very good reason to miss the ski show. I'm okay with that. And also they'll be joined by Molly Butler, who's one of our most exciting emerging talents on the women's side as well. So we really want to kind of showcase, you know, Dave and obviously Billy and Laurie, who are still very much competing, but also the next generation coming up who are really exciting.
Oh, and Olympic year, that'll be really interesting as well. And, you know, Molly Butler's also great. Interviewed her previously on the podcast. And also, I'm delighted to, you know, let listeners know, they probably know already, our equipment expert, Al Morgan, and I will be talking about this year's new kit. I think that'll be on the Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be talking about driving an EV to the Alps and then talk about what it's like to ski on a live volcano when I cover my trip to Mount Etna. So just tell us where and when is it, James?
18th and 19th of October, back at Olympia. So 10 a.m. both days. So, yes, if you haven't got your ticket, I think Ian's got a very special offer for you as well. So do make sure you come along.
We've got some free tickets for the show, so I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Brilliant. OK, that's great, James. I'm going to move back to you, Bethany, if that's OK. I asked you on the show today to talk about Tromso in Norway. I think you went up there last winter, didn't you? Wondered if you could just elaborate, you know, for listeners, I guess the first thing to really understand is people will know where Norway is, maybe as opposed to Nova Scotia. But how did you get there?
I was very lucky enough to go ski touring in Tromso in Norway. It all came about because a group of us, well, three of us, we were planning to go ski touring. 3 days in the Alps was the plan. And then a friend of ours, Sarah, she's like, I've seen they've released direct flights from Geneva to Tromso. Should we go to Norway? And I was like, okay, let's have a look into it. So our 3-day Alps ski touring trip turned into an 8-day Norway ski touring trip. So thanks to my other half for allowing that and looking after the kids. So last winter, EasyJet launched that direct line from Geneva, and they've also got one from Gatwick. And then I've done a bit of research actually, and I realized there are other direct flights with other airlines coming out of the UK as well. And actually those airlines are doing that primarily for Northern Lights tourism. So Tromso is very big for people just going to go and try and spot the Northern Lights. And then for us skiers, the added bonus is that actually it's an amazing place to go ski touring.
I'm actually literally calling up a map to find out exactly where Tromso is to give myself a better idea, which I should have done already. But if you can see the Northern Lights, it must be quite a long way north in Norway. Is that right?
It's the very northern part of Norway. And people might have heard of the Lyngen Alps in Norway or Lofoten. So Tromso is much closer to the Lyngen Alps, but it does have its own ski touring from the town. So it's a relatively big town compared to the rest of that area, where it just feels like there is nothing but fishing villages. I've got to say that it's one of the most amazing places I've been. I was absolutely blown away. And it was like going into a winter wonderland from 20, 30 years ago. You know, the days when you'd kind of open the door and it snowed overnight, and you opened the door the next day and it snowed overnight again. So in my opinion, a very special place.
And, you know, James mentioned he was taking the lift from sea level. In Tromso, do you start ski touring from sea level as well?
Exactly. That's exactly what I thought when James was saying that. It's the same thing. We were very, very lucky. We went at the end of March and we had good conditions. I think sometimes you might have to walk up literally, you know, we're talking maybe 100 metres or so. But when we were there, we could ski from the Bossum Road, basically.
You were ski touring on that trip. But if someone wanted to go for regular lift serve skiing, is that possible there as well?
Tromso itself. No, not really. There is a very kind of small hill, floodlit hill near the town, but you'd never go there to go lift serve skiing. Nordic skiing, however, there's everywhere in Norway where there's snow. There's a big kind of Nordic areas, but really Tromso, you know, what's it famous? It's famous for, there's a university there. There's a lot of university students. There's the Northern Lights and the ski touring. That was my impression that I came away with.
Oh, and a lot of people, you know, their first thought about Norway, and we've covered it quite a few times on their podcast in the last year or so, because to my mind, I think a lot of people are starting to think of Scandinavia as maybe a bit more reliable for snow, you know, if they want to book a half term or later in the season. But one thing that possibly might put them off is high costs, as a reputation for being a very expensive place. What did you think about that?
When we came up with the idea of going, we knew that it's expensive to eat and to drink. So we really went with a kind of shoestring mentality. So we try to think, how can we go skiing and touring in Norway and not spend mega bucks? We basically had booked the easy jets, and obviously you do have to pay for your baggage, you need to take your skis, but we were very frugal with our packing and kind of shared bags. And then we booked an Airbnb, which really was affordable. My kind of it wasn't me, it was my friend Sarah. She said, right, we're going to hire a car. And we looked into it, and that was coming out quite expensive. And then she had the brainwave, because there was three of us. She said, I'm going to look at vans. And basically, by hiring a van with three seats in the front rather than a car, we then cut the price by nearly a third. So that's my secret cheat on car hire. So don't tell anyone, Ian. No, not but what we did, we didn't eat out at all. We didn't go out drinking at all. So when we landed, because we took a very early morning flight, we basically went for a ski tour for a few hours, went to the supermarkets. We'd already made our meal plan for the week, so we knew what we wanted to buy and bought everything for the week, and that was it.
It sounds very efficient and well organized, and I like, you know, those tips for making Tromso more affordable. Evidently, you guys are very keen ski tourers. You know, James mentioned that the kind of vertical drop was around 300 metres. My sense is that in Norway, it also doesn't go particularly high as well. Is that right?
That's right. I think the longest ski tour that we did with there was 1,000 metres, but there isn't that much more that higher. Just to say that obviously we did do it by ourselves, but we just didn't just go and just go skiing. We did a lot of planning. We spent a lot of time with maps, a lot of time with guidebooks, a lot of time kind of collecting knowledge of people we know that skied there before, including mountain guides. One thing I'd say about Norway, they've got this amazing app called Varsum, where it's updated every night. The local mountain guides and other mountain guides that are skiing there have a meeting, and then information is uploaded and people can put any kind of avalanche activity they might have seen onto the app. So it's very, very informed. Saying that, you know, there are lots of mountain guides out there, lots of operations out there. You don't have to do it by yourself. You have got lots of opportunities to do it with other people as well.
So we're probably saying that, you know, this is, it's not for a first-time ski tourer. For a more experienced ski tourer who's looking for something a little bit different, you know, more of an adventure. And on the mountain itself, was it busy? Did you see many other people out there?
No, it wasn't busy at all. There was one tour we did when we were lucky enough to get some clear weather, and it was a Sunday, and it's one of the most famous tours in that area, and there were quite a few people. But apart from that day, we had 2 days where we didn't see any other ski tourers at all, and that's what made it so special. And one thing we'll also say about it is the climate's quite interesting, because it was cold. So, you know, normally you think about ski touring, you might be in like lighter weight kit, but we were skinning in Gore-Tex kit, and we only had a couple of days of sun. It, you know, it was snowy, cloudy, but almost that just made it even more special. And on one particular island called Ringvassuia, which was probably the most remote place that we skied, and you know, we even saw reindeer. It was just really special, and thought it was just so different from skiing in the Alps and different from the kind of big lift served resorts. So yeah, as you can tell, I was a fan.
Yeah, cool. Well, we love to cover all sorts of destinations on the Ski Podcast. In another plug for the London Snow Show, I'm pretty sure Norway exhibiting there as well. Is that right, James?
Norway will indeed be there, yeah. I think we're covering pretty much every country you can ski on in the planet. Maybe not quite, but we're getting close.
So if someone wanted to find out more about that, they could also go to the stand at the show there. Great. Well, we're going to move towards a close now. Thanks for that, Bethany. I always enjoy listener feedback. Love to hear what you think about the show. You can leave me a comment on Spotify, Instagram or Facebook. Our handle there is @theskipodcast, or you can drop me an email to theskipodcast@gmail.com. Dawson_MX bought me a coffee very kindly at buymeacoffee.com/skipodcast. Sent me a very detailed message. Basically explaining that, inspired by the Ski Podcast, he's taking the train from Yorkshire to Laydazal. Explained that it's worked out cheaper than flying with bags, which is fantastic to hear. And also, it's going to be his first ski holiday abroad. So I wish you all the best, and, you know, let us know how it goes. Joseph Childs enjoyed episode 252 about Blade and Lines. He said, I caught up with the Blade and Lines episode and really enjoyed it. Seems like it was an amazing time to be in the industry. And seriously, listener, if you haven't listened to this episode yet, I highly recommend it, as I think it's the best I've ever produced. There are now 271 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with, and 143 of those are listened to in the last week. If you've enjoyed this episode, why not go to skipodcast.com, have a search around the tags and categories, and you're bound to find something that you'll want to listen to as well. In the last week, around 60% of our listeners were in the UK, around 20% in the States, and everyone else spread as far and wide as Colombia, Thailand and South Africa. You can follow me at Skipedia and the podcast at Ski Podcast. You can also follow us on WhatsApp for exclusive material released ahead of each podcast. You can look in the show notes for that link. And if you enjoyed this episode and would like to help the podcast, there are three things you can do. You can follow us or subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can give us a review on Apple Podcasts or leave a comment on Spotify. Both of those two things will help other listeners find us. Or if you're booking ski hire this winter, don't forget that you can help Ski Podcast and save yourself some money on your ski hire by using the code SKIPODCAST when you book at intersportrent.com, or simply take the link in the show notes for your discount to be automatically applied. Right, for now, I'd like to thank my guest today, Bethany. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ian.
And James, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ian. See you at the show.
And finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.